This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham, Scott German, from a breakdown UVA's 30-27 overtime loss to Georgia Tech. And Scott and I, we chatted briefly. We're of two very different minds about this, as far as this goes. I thought a great performance by Virginians. A lot of folks, I could gauge from responses to my previews, also just looking at the message board, that there were a lot of negative folks out there about this game, about Virginia's chances in this game. And Virginia, God, we'll talk about this more, but should have won that game in lots of ways. But, to the different approaches. First, we'll go to Scott. Scott had a thought that Virginia left something on the field there. Scott, take us into your world and your ideas about this loss tonight.
Well, you know, if we were doing this 24 hours from now, I'd probably have a little better perspective on it. But I'll be the first to admit, I am probably front and center of the poor sportsman's line, bad loser's line, whatever line it's in that's not you don't want to be in. I'm probably at the beginning of that line. I'll just kind of look back and look at the negatives. And maybe don't see the big picture. I know we put up some good numbers, and I think our defense was outstanding. I think our defense may have stepped up and defined themselves as to what type of defensive team Coach Mendenhall wants, and they did a great job. But I just think that in the long run, there was a few plays. Special teams certainly wasn't special today. I won't go as far as to say we gave Georgia Tech a win, but I'm just, by the same token, I'm a little disappointed, and I know the team feels that way too. But maybe tomorrow morning we'll realize that, the team stepped up. Defensively, they stepped up, and this should really give them a little bit of extra incentive going down to Blacksburg as if they needed it. But I think when we talk about these games this close to the end of the game, it's kind of, we don't get the truth. We kind of skew a little negatively, at least I do. And I haven't had a chance to go out and break anything yet or kick any of my animals. So, I'll be better later.
Yeah, what I'll say is, looking at the scanning briefly, because I wrote a recap already and posted it. We're talking, Scott and I are talking probably 25 minutes after the field goal missed by Delaney at the end of overtime. Scanning the message board briefly, folks didn't like play calling. Folks never like play calling, and that's the way it is as far as play calling goes. Everybody wants to call their own plays. But I look at the offense. 403-yard total offense today. It's the best performance they've had in a while. I'd written a column earlier this week about how the offense was kind of letting me down a bit. They hadn't had 400 yards of offense since the North Carolina game back a few weeks ago. And so this Georgia Tech defense is pretty good. One of the better defenses in the ACC. Perkins was 21 of 26, 217, one touchdown. Offense didn't turn the ball over today. Perkins also ran, his net yards were 73, but takes sack yardage out of his rush total. He had 87 yards on the ground. Zacchaeus had 111 yards on 11 catches. He was targeted 12 times. He caught the ball 11 times. So the offense moved the ball, averaged 6.6 yards a play, 5 of 9 on third downs. I mean, can't fault the offense. I don't think you can fault the defense. 305 total yards for Georgia Tech. This is a team that I mentioned ran for 268 today, which if anybody else runs for 268, that's a lot. But when they run for 362 and they only complete one pass today, 268's, it's not much for that team from their standpoint. And to me, this one came down to, two plays, really, and they were both on special teams. And not the one, I'm not even going to talk about the one, the missed field goal at the end, because if not for these two plays, and actually if either one of them doesn't happen, there's no field goal at the end. Virginia wins outright. But first half, after Virginia got a stop, Georgia Tech went down first series, got a field goal, defense stiffened. Good job by the defense, by the way, in the red zone. Georgia Tech had four trips in the red zone. And on their first three trips, had two field goals and a turnover on downs. So after then Perkins leads a drive. Virginia's up 7-3. The defense gets a stop and a punt. And the punt, Tavares Kelly calls fair catch at the 10-yard line, lets it hit in front of him. It bounces down to one. We know what happens two plays later. Bryce Perkins is sacked in the end zone. He's injured. We think he's out forever probably because we're UVA fans. He comes back a series later. But that safety made it 7-5, and then Virginia clearly was focused on anything else but covering the free kick. And the free kick was run back. Wanye Thomas ran it back 77 yards for a touchdown. Two-point conversion later, 10 points in about 15 seconds. And there's 10 points right there because of a punt returner not catching the fair catch at the 10-yard line. You catch that at the 10-yard line, none of that happens. Then let's fast forward to the third quarter. Virginia's up 21-16. Defense gets a three and out. The defense is rolling in the third quarter. Georgia Tech had three drives, no points. Punt hits the up man, Darius Bratton, and Georgia Tech recovers. They eventually turn that into a touchdown. So if you can fair catch the ball at the 10-yard line, if you don't let that ball hit you at the 41-yard line, Georgia Tech has 18 points off the board in a game that went into overtime tied at 27. That's the game. Virginia, everything else you do right, and you lose the game because of two punts. That's how this game goes, as far as I'm concerned, at least.
Yeah, when you it's a close game, and you lose a close game, it's easy to go back and find one or two plays that you can say cost you or were decisive. But, I still think some of the play calling was a little questionable. But like you said earlier, we all like to put our offensive coordinator hats on and play calls and call plays, and it's easy to second guess them when they work, when they don't work. We don't sit around lamenting or boasting about what a great call it was if they do work. We just move on. But, it's frustrating because this game was winnable. It was right there for the taking, but I think the program's just not quite to that point yet. I think they're making strides to get to that point, but I don't believe they're quite ready to take that next step. Hopefully, a game like this will put a little fire in their bellies. Heading into next week, going down to play a Virginia Tech team that, quite frankly, I know we can say we can throw out the records when these two teams play, but they suck. And if we lose that game next week, I really am going to say all the strides we made this year, not so much, because that's a game that Virginia should win next year because Tech has clearly mailed it in for this season.
Yeah, let's talk about Virginia Tech in a second. I want to just vehemently disagree that Virginia is not ready to take a next step. This is a game that, let's give Georgia Tech credit, they took advantage of issues. They took advantage of the two issues with the punts, and they won the game. But this is a game that Virginia, in every other way, the offense doesn't turn the ball over. They average 6.6 yards a play. They hold Georgia Tech to 5.1 yards a play. They hold Georgia Tech 100 yards under their rushing average. This was a good performance by a team on the road in an environment they've not played well in for many years. Virginia has not won there in over 10 years. And, they lost the game. So you could say, oh, they still lost. Either way, they played good, they still lost. But, let's be honest about this. Anybody listening to this podcast right now, nobody thought Virginia was going to win this game. Now, they were only a 6.5-point underdog, but you're UVA fans listening to this podcast. You thought going into this that Georgia Tech was going to run like Swiss cheese, a knife through Swiss cheese, a knife through hot butter, whatever you want to call it, through this Virginia defense. The defense did its job. 305 yards total offense with this Georgia Tech offense, which has been killing teams. 49 against Virginia Tech just a few weeks ago, for example. So, I don't know that Virginia lost this game. I'll give it to Georgia Tech. They won the game. They made two plays. Those two plays in my mind. Now, Scott was, when we were talking before we got right here on the air, we started recording. There was a play that Scott was mentioning, and I know the play you're talking about, Scott. You didn't remember the exact situation, but it was third and one for Virginia at the roughly the 15-yard line or so of Georgia Tech, right around 5 minutes to go, and Virginia threw a pass in the end zone instead of trying to gain the 1 yard to get a first down. Is that the play you're thinking of, Scott, that Virginia – yeah.
Exactly. In my mindset there, again, it's kind of like – although not nearly the magnitude of the situation like last week when Liberty inexplicably, well, maybe it's not anywhere near that, but my thought there is you're running the ball. You're really having your way running the ball. Run it, pick up the first down and run some more clock. You're going for broke there on one play that you don't have to. You don't have to take that calculated risk. You can play conservative and live to play another day.
Well, and what I would say is this: watching that play, I don't think that the play was designed to go in the end zone. I think that the play call was to go short, and Georgia Tech had it covered short, and so Perkins at that stage, the only option he had was to throw in the end zone, and he actually had a brief sliver of window there, and it was, you know, well defended on the back end by Georgia Tech, but I don't think it was meant to. Let's just throw on third and one, let's throw a fade pass. Fade passes are not 50% passes even. We call them 50-50 balls, but they're really more like 25-75 balls. I don't think that's what the goal was. I think that maybe that's execution issue more than a play call issue. I think that the play call was to try to throw something in the flat, get a first down, and it just didn't work. And, you know, yeah, you can go back then and say, why not run the ball? You know, and I'll say this about play calling. I mean, you know, I'm not an expert on this either, but I do think a lot, you know, I guess the games I've called as an announcer the last few years, I've started to think more like play callers who and what they do. And, you know, they go in, they're studying film all week long. You know, when we're talking about games, we're watching other stuff on TV. I mean, they're breaking down tendencies of themselves, also of the other teams. And for whatever, you know, they come up with a game plan. They say on this particular down and distance in this situation, we're going to do this or we're going to do that. You know, they did that. And, you know, it's easy to pull out of the hat and say one play went the wrong way, and so I want to be angry at the one play that went the wrong way. I mean, there was design behind it. I don't think it was just a willy-nilly play. It just didn't get executed right. But sometimes that happens. And I'll back a nay on this. I keep you know, struggling with how to pronounce his last name. But Robert Anae, I thought, called a good game. And if you know, that's one play that didn't go right. That's obviously. I thought also. I mean, let's break down a couple other plays that maybe didn't go right. I thought there was a when Perkins picked up the I think it was the first down with no timeouts left in that last drive of regulation. It looked pretty clear that he knew going up to the line he was not going to spike it. He was going to do a fake spike. And unfortunately for him, Aziz Dubois was not on the same page. You know, I'm just guessing. That's a play they run in practice all the time, and they just weren't able to connect on it. I mean, when he fake spiked it, I'm thinking, well, Dubois is probably standing in the end zone by himself because everybody else for Georgia Tech was standing at the line of scrimmage, and Dubois didn't run. So little things like that. You know, you work on that. That's not a call you make at the line. That's just something you make eye contact and you do it. And Dubois just didn't run the play right. That's the game could have been won right there, but it wasn't. And, you know, it's execution. It's, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm all with an eye on this. I thought he called a good game. I thought Perkins executed a good game. I loved how Brennan Armstrong came in. His one series led him to a touchdown, had to convert a third down on a third and long run. You lose the game, and that sucks. I've got no quibbles. I actually thought they played well today. And I'm actually encouraged more than I thought I would be with a loss. I thought that, you know, honestly, if Virginia was going to lose this game, I thought it would be a blowout loss. And, you know, the fact that Georgia Tech had to fight tooth and nail to win one at home, I don't think there's any shame in that.
No, I don't think they have anything to be disappointed. Yeah, certainly not ashamed of anything. They don't have any reason to have to drop their head. But I think having a little bit more time to think about it, what I probably mean about the team not ready to make that step. I think that they're a team that their margin of error is very slim because of numerous things, depth being, I guess, being the biggest. But they're also a team that can't have a, you know, between the three teams, offense, defense, special teams, they have to hit on all three of them generally to win a game. And today, you know, kind of showed you, offensively, they played very well. They put up good numbers. Perkins played well. Defensively, they did a great job holding, we say holding, comparatively speaking to what other teams have done. They did a great job sort of containing Georgia Tech's triple option offense. But special teams let them down, and probably in the end, that's what cost them. So I guess that's what I'm more saying, is that they're a team that can't can't have two or three, generally. They got to have all three teams, all three aspects of their game clicking in order to win a football game.
Yeah, most teams probably, you know, most teams except for Alabama and Clemson can that those two teams can have something wrong on one of those three units, and even then, you know, I mean, they make the game closer. But most teams are going to have issues if one of your units, especially, I mean, 18 points. I'm giving 18 points on the ledger of UVA special teams to Georgia Tech because, again, safety, two touchdowns with two two-point conversions that were direct results of two punts that they didn't field right. Those are basic things, but you got to do all the things right. And I would guarantee you that Bronco's either talking about that now or probably finished talking about that, or he'll at least concede it privately. Now, let me here's one area where I'll be very, very critical. Very, very critical of Anai. And this is, you might remember this play, and at the time it seemed insignificant, but I was yelling at the TV, because of course we're working for our home offices today. I was yelling at the TV when this happened. Third and 32, midway through the third quarter. Third and 32, UVA's got, you know, with after a sack and a holding penalty, so it's third and 32. And UVA calls a timeout because they got the wrong personnel on the field. And I'm yelling at the TV, what are you calling a timeout on third and 32 for? You're going to need that timeout later on. Because third and 32, if you get a five-yard penalty for delay of game, it's third and 37. What is the difference with third and 37 with third and 32? You're still not going to get the first down. And so they blew a timeout on third and 32. And then you get the ball back with a minute and 4 seconds left. Now, yes, Virginia, you could argue, hey, they still scored. They still tied it and sent it to overtime. If you have one more timeout, do you get a touchdown? So that's a little weird thing I didn't like. But other than that, you know, I can't say anything. I thought that especially the defensive game plan, and this is not just comparatively, Georgia Tech had 305 yards of offense. That's well below their overall season average. Virginia was third in the ACC in total defense. 305 yards is below their average coming into the game. So that's a pretty stellar defensive effort. But it is what it is. Still a loss and a gut punch. And I guess what I'm trying to do here is for folks who are listening to the podcast, I'm not just trying to sell you a bunch of crap that, you know, be happy with this loss. I'm trying to tell you this was actually – once folks calm down, Scott well represents the fan base, the frustrated fan base here, the folks we see on the message boards and on Twitter, because, yeah, it's frustrating. Man, you're so close to winning this game and going 8-3. You should have won this game. Virginia should have won this game. But you don't, and now we turn our attention to the enemy down in Blacksburg. And, boy, I didn't get to watch any of that game, Scott, because obviously it was playing at the same time as ours, but 38-14 kind of speaks because Miami had lost four straight going in. So what the hell? 38-14, Miami with the win in Blacksburg. And now the Hokies need to beat Virginia and find somebody to play on December 1st just to get back into a bowl. You know, I guess if I could put it this way, Scott, and for our listeners out there, would you rather lose 30-27 in a game you should have won, or would you rather get your ass kicked 38-14 and be 4-6 right now? I'm choosing our side.
Well, and, you know, and our team is not mailing it in like the Hokies seem to be. And, of course, next week's a different story. I mean, they'll have that'll be their ball game unless somehow or another they can persuade. Doesn't VMI have a game possibly that they could still play? You know, unless they can convince VMI to make the trip down to Blacksburg to get that. Maybe after Saturday, if they beat Virginia, they'll be frantically on the phone calling VMI up to see if VMI will come to Blacksburg to rent a victim and get that sixth win. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, Tech is, I'll flip channels back and forth, and they really struggle. I mean, they do not look like they're giving any effort whatsoever, none. It's, if it wasn't for their ugly jerseys, the jerseys that they were wearing, you would have a hard time even recognizing what we've come to know as Virginia Tech football. They look nothing like a Tech team that we've seen. Offensively, defensively, they're just listless. And hopefully prime for the taking next week. Real quick, let's go back. So what you're saying is that, that was a play too, that third and 32, that we actually called timeout. I had flashbacks of Mike London days. Because those are the type of plays Those are the type of decisions that we were accustomed to seeing from Mike London coach teams. And when you bring in an offensive coordinator that you're paying well over $1 million that your coach handpicked to bring with you, you just can't fathom making a call like that. And I guess what you're saying is that there's probably no page in the playbook that'll pick up a first down on a 3rd and 32.
Why call a timeout? What Virginia did after the timeout, I mean, it was an admirable effort, if you want to call it that. I think it was a 17-yard pass play. And I'm basically calling it before it happened. Throw it short to Zacchaeus and let him run and see what happens. He got 17 yards, but it was still 4th and 15. It set up a punt. You know, that's what you're going to do is set up a punt, get better field position on the punt. But,
I 15 yards probably because Georgia Tech was willing to give him 15 yards. I mean, you stand no chance of picking up a first down on that play. To call a timeout that we could have used at the end of the game. Those are the kind of things that stick to my mind. That maybe I need to let them go, but those are just plays that, when you're paying an offensive coordinator $1 million a year, you cannot have those. And I can't imagine under any circumstances he can explain that one.
That all said, Robert and I is the best offensive coordinator we've had since Bill Musgrave. And so, I have to shut myself down from looking at social media and message boards during games and actually after games too, because it maddens me. But seeing a post that says fire him because of something like that, do people understand? Do people want to go back to the Mike Groh era? Do people want to go back to the God? What was? I guess Bill Lazor was okay. He went to the NFL and was a lot better. Once he got the Mike London shackles off him, he was much better in the NFL for a few years. But do we really want to go back to those days? You look at your team you got right now. You've got a quarterback that I think next year we're going to put together a Heisman campaign for because Bryce Perkins is that good. You know, you've got a receiver, Zacchaeus, who won't be back next year, unfortunately, but he's breaking every record in the book, and it's been because he's played 3 years in this Ane offense. So, you know, I'll take Ane any day of the week and 10 times on Sunday over the guys we had in the Mike London era, the last few years of the Al Groh era. Yes, that 3rd and 32 was awful. That's you can't do that. But that's one play. That's for folks out there like the message board folks who are calling for his head and everything else. Just think about it, people. I said this to a commenter on our website this week, Scott. Complaining about the run defense, complaining about the offensive line, and complaining about depth. Fans, your team is still 7-4. You know, I know 7-4 is not Alabama, it's not Clemson, but we were 2-10 2 years ago, getting beat by Richmond 37-20 at home. We fired two coaches that both went out in flames. 7-4 is okay. I'll take 7-4. Now we got to beat Virginia Tech. That's the goal. Now we got to beat Virginia Tech. We got 6 days to get ready for that. Actually, 5 days to get ready for that. But, God, the world is not coming to an end because we're 7-4. I would honestly, Scott, I thought this team would win 4 games this year. They've impressed the hell out of me to get to this stage, and even losing this way there's nothing wrong. I'm okay with where everything is as far as this team. And there's a lot of young guys, most of whom will be back next year. Of course, we still got one or two more to play, but. No, I'm not throwing anybody under any buses. So that probably puts me in conflict with Tony Covington. But and anybody out there listening knows, I ain't anybody's pocketbook. UVA's not paying me any money. I've been critical of Bronco Mendenhall for off the field stuff, but not on the field stuff. I'm extremely happy with where they are right now.
I am too. And to think that we're this 11. This is game 11. And we're still this passionate about UVA football. We're, you know, in the latter days of London tenure at UVA, we were already firmly entrenched in basketball season. So the passion is starting to return. The fact that we get upset, the fact that the message board does, you know, contain a bunch of, you know, radical fans that want to fire Coach Mendenhall and take his children from him and, you know, put a for sale sign in the offensive coordinator front yard. Yeah, that's kind of good in a way, because it does show that there's passion for the team, and that we didn't just expect to go down to Atlanta and get our butts kicked and come home. They were disappointed. You know, our fan base was disappointed that we lost a game that we probably should have won. My point is, we're probably not ready to win those games quite yet until we can start. You know, a margin of error is not very large right now. So a couple of bad special team plays, a couple of questionable calls from the sideline. Those are the kinds of things that separate us from winning and losing. Hopefully next year, we can overcome an occasional special team play or an occasional blunder on the sideline. So that's where we are, and hopefully next week, man, what a big game that would be to go down there and finish with a win at Tech and close out an 8-4 season.
Well, and so, yeah, we'll turn our attention there as we wrap up our podcast here. Yeah, that's – I'll be there. It'll be my first time covering a game in Lane Stadium. I've been there as a fan. UVA is 1-0 all time in Lane Stadium when I'm in the arena. So that was 1998. It's the last time we won there. It was 1998. We've only won one time since 1998. We all know that was 2003. I'll be there Friday afternoon covering that game. So here's what I'll say. Scott, you made the point earlier, since we're transitioning from Georgia Tech to Virginia Tech. You made a point earlier that for Virginia Tech, their wheels have long since come off. They're 4-6 now, and you know, they're 4-6 now because they missed a game earlier in the season. So they're 4-6 right now, and they have to beat Virginia and find somebody to play them to even get 6 and get a bowl game. But even more than that, likely this is their big game of the season. I mean, and actually it is. Even if they play in a bowl, it's going to be in a nondescript bowl against some third-tier conference team somewhere up north in a dome that nobody goes to see. So this is their biggest game of the season. And the wheels have been coming off for a while, but does having to protect this streak, does that get their attention, their focus back that hasn't been there, gosh, however long it's been? I mean, the only impressive win they had this season was Florida State, and that's – Florida State's not that good, as it turns out. So – but does the we got to protect this streak, we got to protect our house, let's just, if we can't do anything else, let's beat Virginia, does that give them enough focus to, and does it even matter? Do they even have enough talent to make a level of focus this week matter? And of course, from Virginia's side, hey, we're 7-4, we just lost, that sucks, but we're still, on paper, we're better than Virginia Tech, but we haven't beaten them in forever. So, you know, what happens if a punt hits a guy in the foot, you know, in the third quarter of next Friday? What happens if Bryce Perkins gets sacked and gets knocked out of the game next Friday? I mean, the Virginia guys are waiting. I've been saying this for years, so I'm kind of repeating myself. But the Virginia guys on the sidelines are probably waiting for something bad to happen. And the Virginia Tech kids are over there waiting for the ball to bounce their way. So, you know... on paper, we should win this game by 2 touchdowns, if not more, but they don't play them on paper. They play them on the field.
Yeah, you know, in retrospect, here's the way I look at it. Tech's not going to a bowl game this year, and here's the reason I'm saying that. They're not going to get another game because they're really probably not interested in scheduling that 12th game if they lose next week. Why on earth would they want to schedule a 12th game if they're already 4-7?
Yeah.
They would get 15,000 fans, if that. And I don't care how good a fan you are, you're not going to that game. And they can't wait until halftime if they've got a 28-point lead against Virginia, or if you're in the game and start calling teams and inviting them to come to Blacksburg. So those decisions are already decided right now because of the loss today. They're 4-6. Even if they win next week, it's too late. It's too late for Tech. So what you're doing is you're just telling your players, you're trying to get their attention now, and you're saying next Saturday in Lane Stadium is our bowl game, and we have the pride of holding serve and keeping that streak going against Virginia while we recover from injuries, while we get a little more experience, while we go out and recruit whatever recruiting they're going to do, the JUCO route, whatever. So next Saturday is Tech's bowl game, and that's the way they're going to play it because they're not out there trying to find the 12th team. I can tell you that right now.
It's Black Friday, so remember, don't forget next week, Scott. It's Friday, actually, so don't be out of town next Friday. You got to watch game on Friday. Yeah, you know, you're exactly right in that sense. I would agree. At this stage, why would you schedule a game? Because it would hinge, right? Because you'd be paying somebody to come play you. So if you're Tech and you're looking at, because Mike Barber for the Times-Dispatch had a really good story about this earlier in the week, about who would even be available potentially for a game. Because, of course, East Carolina was the game they were scheduled to play, and East Carolina has already scheduled with North Carolina State for December 1st. So the teams that seem to be out there were Liberty was one, but Liberty already has a game scheduled for December 1st against Norfolk State. They're actually making up the game that was canceled by the hurricane. So you could buy Norfolk State out. You could buy Liberty out. But Liberty's probably going to make you write them a really big check, and also probably extract a game or two in their stadium for Virginia Tech to come visit a couple times. So, I mean, that game would be $1 million-plus game plus a couple dates in the future. That's an expensive game to on the chance that you might get to beat them and get a sixth win. So there's also Marshall is out there, but Marshall's as of – I haven't looked at scores today, but they were still in their division race in their conference for a chance at a conference championship game. Also, Appalachian State, also still in the mix in their conference for a conference championship game, possible appearance, again, as of when football started today. So if either of those teams falls out, you know, you can pay them a lot of money. But if you're paying them a lot of money and then you lose to Virginia, I think you make a great point, Scott. You're not going to offer them that money. You're probably talking $1 million. To have somebody come play in your stadium on December 1st on the chance that it might be a chance for your sixth win. So, yeah, you're right. That's it. I think their season's over after Friday at about 7 o'clock. So I don't know if that's good for Virginia, though, because that is their bowl game. And, but I think you're right. I think you're exactly right there, Scott. Their season's over next Friday night.
Yeah, and that's what I was – the point I was making is that if you're – Coach Wednesday, that's what you're selling all week in practice, guys. We're not playing a 12th game. Next Friday, excuse me. That's it. That's the end of the game. That's the end of the season for us. What's on the line is pride. What's on the line is continuing this winning streak. What's on the line is being able to say, you know, in one of our worst seasons ever, we still were able to beat Virginia. You don't want to lose that. So there's a lot of incentive for the Hokies. Extra incentive, I believe, because of what happened today. And Virginia's got to, you know, be prepared for that. And I believe they will. I think they played well enough. I think once the emotions get settled down a little bit, they can look at the good things they did. And I know Coach Mendenhall will point them out. I listened to his press conference. He was very positive. He was from the same school that you were preaching from this afternoon, earlier today in our show, pointing out all the positives. And I think by the time practice comes around Monday, Virginia will be able to take something from this game, and I'm looking for a big win next Friday in Blacksburg.
Now, I was going to ask one more question, Scott. You get your thoughts on this. I don't know where I come down as I even think of asking the question, but you talked about what Virginia Tech's playing for. They're playing for pride. They're playing to extend the streak, you know, to put a cap on a bad season with at least beating Virginia. What do you think about this? I'm jumping on the hot – I put Fuente on the hot seat a little too early, but we both scan message boards. Now, our message board people today are quibbling over a 30-27 overtime loss in a game that before the day started, the same people who were quibbling about the overtime loss thought we would lose by 3 touchdowns. But their folks over there down on Tech sideline, they're not quibbling over a 3-point overtime loss. They're talking about another bad loss. I think it's a 4 straight for Tech. They were 4-2 at one point this season. They're 4-6 now. A 38-14 loss after losing 52-22 to Pittsburgh last week. So here's you could probably tell where I'm going with this. Before the season started, I don't think there was any question. Fuente was 19-8 in 2 seasons. He took Virginia Tech to the ACC championship game his first season. They actually played Clemson well. he's going to be 4-6. Even if he beats Virginia next week, he's 5-6. If he loses to Virginia, he's 4-7, and he lost to Virginia. Is there any chance that could be his last game? I'm not sure. I don't think Virginia Tech likes. I don't think their fan base likes losing. I don't think Whit Babcock likes losing. Is it a chance that that's his last game if he loses next week?
I don't think so. Here's the reason. Here's my reason behind that. First of all, he's a Babcock hire. Unlike Coach Mendenhall, who was hired by Craig Littlepage and Oliver. I'm so glad his first name is beginning to fade from my memory.
John.
John. thanks. You know, Babcock hired Flint this, and to cut the cord after 3 years, and you can look back, and I'm certainly not going to be a Virginia Tech apologist, but they have had some injuries. They've had some unexpected departures from the team. So not saying that's an excuse for him, but I think he gets another year, win or lose Friday, just because I think in today's, you know, there's Tech's got a big campaign going on right now for fundraising, and I don't know if they can just write a check out for whatever it would take to make him go away. I don't think they do that after this season, but I think that certainly, as 2019 season, he's sitting down on a burner that's as red hot as you can possibly get. I don't think his job's going to be, you know, eliminated. He won't lose his job unless they come out and just get absolutely embarrassed Friday, and I don't see that happening.
Okay, so you make good points there, but let me follow up with that. So Babcock hired Fuente, and he would be less likely, or probably not at all likely, to fire his own guy after 3 years because he'd be admitting defeat. But you know who Babcock didn't hire? There's a defense that gave up 52 to Pitt last week, 49 to Georgia Tech a few weeks ago, 38 today to Miami, led by a guy named Bud Foster, who was sort of forced upon Justin Fuente. And his defense hasn't been Bud Foster defense at all this season. So, so now I roll the dice. Virginia beats Virginia Tech next week. Is that Bud Foster's last game at Blacksburg?
Oh, I think that you know, we're really wading into some muddy waters or murky waters here, because normally we don't spend this much time during the whole season talking about Virginia Tech football, but I don't think there's any love lost between the head coach and Bud Foster. I don't know the reasoning. I thought it was a terrible idea to retain Foster, because I think that took a lot of power out of Fuente's hands when he came there. Don't know whether that was Fuente's idea or not, or whether or not that was part of the deal to make Coach Beamer go away quietly. But I believe that after 3 years, when you see the horrendous defensive Tech has played this year, I don't think there's any doubt that Coach Foster, this will be his last game. I'm almost certain of that. But, you know, who knows? I'm not – we were there in that room, in that media room at Scott Stadium, when Brad Babcock, displayed some of the absolute most callous, most rude thing we've ever seen in sports, when he stole Coach Beamer's thunder. And Coach Beamer, you and I both have tremendous respect for him. You had to be there to see it, when he basically took the mic away from what was Coach Beamer's last game as a head coach regular season. I haven't really had a lot of love for Mr. Babcock since then, so I'm kind of got a smile on my face for anything that makes him look bad.
Yeah, the turmoil, I mean, we have a week to get ready for the game, but the turmoil is definitely, for us Virginia fans, the turmoil going on with their football program is definitely enjoyable right now. And we hope we can cap the week with a win that will just further stick the knife into the back there, right? So, but we have a whole week to get ready for that, as I mentioned. Well, not a whole week. It's a short week. Friday game. So Scott and I will get back together early next week, probably on Monday, and we'll lick our wounds here a little bit. We'll get ready. We'll start thinking about Virginia Tech. We'll break down Virginia Tech, Virginia. And we've got some basketball to get you ready for, too, as the Hoos are headed to the Bahamas. Wish we were going with them. But they're headed to the Bahamas for the Battle for Atlantis, Middle Tennessee State, 9:30 on Wednesday night, the first game of three for Virginia basketball, number four in the country right now. So good time of year to be a Wahoo, and we'll get you all ready for it. For Scott German, I'm Chris Cram. I'll sign us off here. Virginia, again, loses tonight 30-27, but I'll still end it the same way I always do. Wahoo, wah.